Welcome to Glowcast. Today I have with me my friend Erin Villar. She's here today to talk about her journey through reproduction and where she's at today. Welcome, Erin.
Hello, how are you?
Good. So I'm so excited you decided to come and sit with me in my studio today. I often do these things on through the internet, so it's really cool when we get to do it in person.
Sure. Happy to be here. Thank you.
So I know a little bit about your story, and you had posted something on Facebook the other day that I just thought was so powerful. I know you've gone through quite a few things with reproductive challenges, and I just thought it's the whole purpose of this podcast is to kind of take the crap that nobody talks about and put it out there for people that are going through this stuff to have a guide post, you know, a beacon and that somebody else has gone through it. They're not alone. And you had posted something on Facebook the other day that really touched me. And I thought, you know what, let me see if you want to come on and talk about it. So I know it's heavy stuff and really hard, but I so appreciate that you're here to tell your story.
Absolutely. And if it helps anybody or if somebody can connect with the story, and while I was going through it, there were a lot of times I felt alone, and I have a wonderful spouse, but it's still a really difficult thing to go through. And knowing that somebody else maybe went through something similar and can relate to what I was going through, I think it was would have been helpful at the time, and I'm hoping that this will help someone else.
Cool. So where do you want to start?
I mean, we could go, I'm in a same-sex marriage, so obviously reproduction was going to be a challenge. We started basically right after we were married, and after about 5 years of on and off cycles of IVF and different insemination processes, we just really weren't having a lot of success. So we took some time off and traveled and had a great time. And then we decided that we had always said we would foster. We'd always said that we wanted to foster and potentially adopt, regardless of whether we had our own children or not. We decided after all that time of not really getting to a point where we thought we were going to have a child, we were going to start to certify for foster care. And so the fall of 2014, we started the process to certify with the county in foster care. Unfortunately, about 3 weeks into our certification, we found out that Brittany was diagnosed with breast cancer. So we were kind of torn if we were going to finish or if we were going to put it on hold and really just address her journey through, you know, breast cancer. But she, being the strong person she is, refused to stop the foster care. So she did it simultaneously while she was going through chemotherapy and all of the treatment for breast cancer. We continued all of the classes for foster care. We completed everything that we could possibly complete until we had to get medically certified. And so the department told us, we want you guys, you've done everything you need to do, but we have to wait for Brittany's treatment to be done, and she needs to be cleared by all the doctors, and then we can kind of move forward. So we had a short period of kind of just focusing on Brittany's health and getting her through all of the chemo and all of the surgeries. And in the spring of 2015, she finished her chemo on April 9th. And on May 12th, they certified our house for foster care. She did not want to wait. And we were placed shortly thereafter with our first placement, which was, three siblings who, it was an emergency placement. And, you know, when you get a call for foster care, it's typically, you know, we have this child, this age, can you help? And they'll tell you this is emergency placement. It could only be a couple of days, or this is, you know, an unknown amount of time. We're still working on resources for them. Or sometimes they'll call you and say, we have a child who's in foster care and we're looking for an adoptive family. Can you help us? And for this particular case, they told us, you know, this is an emergency case. We're looking at resources for them. They're probably going to end up going with family. But we were just excited to get the call, you know, and, sure. And we welcomed three wonderful children into our home. And one was a 5-day-old premature baby.
Wow.
And she came with a lot of medical stuff going on with her. But they were just awesome kids. I mean, regardless, I mean, despite what they had been through, they're just the most amazing, happy, wonderful little kids. And so after a couple of days, they were moved to an uncle of theirs, which, as sad as we are to see them go, it's nice to know that they're going to be with their family still. So that's kind of like bittersweet in those moments.
Okay, so once we called them the S's, because they all had names that started with S. So once the S's were moved on with their uncle, you know, Brittany and I had talked about it, and we just were really ready to try again with IVF. And at the same time, we got a call for two little guys. So we had a 3-month-old and a 2.5-year-old placed with us. And this was a unknown placement. They had stopped looking for other resources for them, but they still were in foster and they were still working with the parent to try to reunite the family at some point down the road. And in the meantime, we contacted our reproductive endocrinologist and we were ready to kind of get back at it. About late August, the two little guys left us. They went to a family friend, and we started to work on our first cycle back onto IVF. And at the same time, the county called us on a little girl, we'll call her Lo, and she was an adoptive child, which we were really excited about. She was only 13 months old. Super cute, super happy, just wonderful little kid. And they said, hey, you know, she's her family's not going to be able to get her back. It's not really working out. And we would really love for you to adopt her. Can you take her? And the journey with adoption with foster care is just so loaded with steps and just so many different things that have to happen. Mm-hmm. When they call you, they'll always say, this is an adoptive case, but basically anything can happen.
Right.
And it's true. So Lo came to us in August as an adoptive case, and we started our cycle, and we found out in late September that I was pregnant, and we had what looked like a wonderful, viable pregnancy. And then we had Lo with us, and we were so excited. Like, our family was really starting to kind of come together, and they called us again. there was a little boy who was living with Lo, and his case was going to adoption. And would we take him, since they had spent so much time together, and would we be willing to take him and adopt him? So we said yes. We'll call him EJ. Wonderful little guy, very quiet and kind of withdrawn a bit. And so there were some concerns as far as his development, and we weren't really sure, you know, what he needed. So we started working pretty heavy with him on developing gross motor and fine motor and getting him to wean away from the bottle. He was about 10 months old at this point. So he was kind of behind on some of the motor, and there was really no language. And he was a bit kind of turned off. Like, he didn't really engage a lot. Okay. So we spent weeks and weeks getting him to a place where all of a sudden he was like just totally blossoming. You know, he was off the bottle, he was walking, he was jumping, he was eating solid foods, and him and Lo were just like thick as thieves. They were great together. And my pregnancy was moving forward, and we were just really, really excited. It was just looking like, you know, this image, this picture we had of our family was starting to come together, and we knew everything kind of felt like this is where we needed to be. We made it to like the beginning of November, and my OB was getting a little concerned because the development of the fetus wasn't really going the way it should have, but he wasn't at the point where he was certain we were kind of doomed. We were kind of like on a wait and see. So all of a sudden I was in there every couple of days, even like 2 times a week, 3 times a week, just to kind of monitor what was going on. And we also got a call from the county that the foster mother who had EJ and Lo before us decided she wanted them back and she was going to adopt them. So when that happens, they give you what's called a 10-day notice. And that means that you you know, within 10 days, the children will be removed from your home. It's your responsibility to kind of gather up their things and make sure they have everything ready to go and try to prepare them for the big change that lie ahead and try to prepare yourselves for that as well. And so the week of Thanksgiving on Monday, the two little ones were picked up and they were brought to go back and stay with their previous foster mother. On Tuesday, as luck would have it, I had a terrible car accident. I was okay. I mean, honestly, I don't even think I had a scratch on me, but my car was totaled. I was having a really bad week at this point. And then on Wednesday, we went to the doctor and I got the unfortunate news that the baby had failed to thrive. So we had to accept that we had lost our first viable pregnancy in 6 years of IVF. Also, still grieving the loss of the two children we were trying to adopt. So, needless to say, it was not our best week.
Yeah.
And we had actually, unfortunately, we had family coming to town because it was Thanksgiving. Right. So we had a house full of family that we had to host, which actually ended up being a blessing because it was a healthy distraction. We had everyone kind of like rallying around us as our family typically does with all the fun stuff we've had to deal with. And it was just after the Thanksgiving holiday, it was kind of like all hitting us, you know. It was, I was done with IVF at this point because I had had so many needles and appointments and everything. And every time I would do a cycle, you know, at this point I was like 36, 37 years old. So with all the progesterone and the estrogen, I was just gaining a ton of weight with the cycle. Yeah. And then after the cycle, I would had put, you know, 12, 15 pounds on, and I would have to lose the weight, obviously, to be healthy. But also, if I was considering doing another cycle, I needed to kind of come back down to zero, so to speak, where, you know, my start point. So after that, I was just done. I said to Brittany, I can't do this anymore. And they told us during Brittany's treatment that it would be extremely unlikely that she would be able to get pregnant because chemo basically causes sterility. And we did do preservation. We had about 18 eggs frozen.
Right.
We used them all at that point, and we used them on my cycle. So we didn't have her eggs. I was done. We had at that point just said, okay, you know what? It's just not in the cards. We have foster care and we'll just adopt as many kids as we want. And we had accepted that that was going to be our journey. And shortly thereafter, the county called us with two school-aged girls and asked if we would foster them to adopt them. That was mid-December.
Mm-hmm.
They would be placed with us on the 29th, they said, of December. So we started, our house at that point was not prepared for school-aged kids at all. We were used to lots of little ones being placed with us. So we started kind of changing out the whole house. I mean, we got bunk beds and we changed out the furniture from, you know, more mature stuff for the older kids. And we had just said, okay, you know, maybe this is what we're supposed to do at this point. And as hard as it was, because we really wanted that baby, we really wanted to, you know, have our own baby. We were excited about older girls and being able to get out and do things and have fun with them. So we started preparing for that. And about 3 days before they were placed with us, the county called again. They had a little baby, and she was just about 3 months old. She had been in foster care for 2 weeks and had been in three homes. In the placement, in the words of the woman who does placement, she basically said, we have a three-month-old who won't stop crying and doesn't sleep. Can you help us?
Sign me up.
Yeah, you know, most people are like, but I don't know. Really, we were also facing these two new girls coming into our home. And so probably most rational adults would have been like, you know, this isn't the best time. But something just told me that this little one needed us. And so, you know, I told her it's probably a yes, but let me talk to Brittany first. So I sent Brittany a text message. It was 3 month old. And, you know, I tell her the whole spiel. And they even said at the time, this is more of an emergency placement. We're working on resources. She probably won't stay long term with you. And so we had just said, okay, you know what, let's just do this. It's a little one who is having a hard time. In 2 weeks, she's been in three homes. She probably doesn't know which way is up. And they brought the most beautiful little girl to our house. And I was at work, and Brittany was home, and her mom was visiting. And she sends me this picture of just the cutest kid ever. And I just couldn't believe that this adorable little baby was at our house after everything we had been through in the last, like, 4 weeks. And they were right. She didn't sleep, and she wouldn't stop crying. So that was, I think it was like a Thursday. And the next morning after a long night, I had said, you know what, we're going to the pediatrician. Like, babies don't just cry like this. Right. Something is not right. We went to the doctor, and our pediatrician said there's just too many question marks because she's been in so many different places in such a short time. It sounds like some of those people were struggling with her being there, and so she could have been hurt. You need to go to the ER. And he ordered this just massive battery of tests. So we'll call her S. Myself and S went straight to the ER for a nice 9-hour stint. And they ran literally every test you can think of, x-rays and blood work, and they catheterized her. It was just horrible to watch. Mm-hmm. And we found out she had an allergy to milk protein. And so the formula she was taking was literally eating her stomach. It was causing it to bleed. So within 24 hours of her being off that formula and on the proper formula, she was like a new baby. Happy, smiling, still didn't really sleep, but just a happy baby. And, you know, a week out, just a totally different kid. And when they placed her with us, they had said, you know, we're looking at failure to thrive for her, which means with infants, they wonder, you know, basically what this child will ever be capable of. Well, like, will they gain weight? Will they develop an intellectual capacity to function on their own? When the diagnosis of failure to thrive falls on a child, there's so many unknowns and so many questions as to what's going to happen. And they were sure that that's where our little S was. And I mean, she really proved them wrong. Within like weeks, she was just like this awesome blossoming kid. And she just changed everything for us. You know, we were in this like really dark place, and we had these two girls who were just so cool. They loved having the baby there all the time. And we were all out and about and doing things all the time. And it was just a really amazing thing that we had gone through that horrible week that just should never be spoken of again. And we had this great little baby. And if I knew that week what my life could turn into, you know, obviously would have made the following weeks a little easier for us. But, you know, S just really kind of opened us back up to considering another chance. Right. And then miraculously, Brittany started to her cycle again. And so the doctor said, hey, if you guys want to try again, like, do it now, because we don't know how long this is going to last. And we did. And one time, and Brittany carried, and we were immediately pregnant with our little girl, Phoenix, which is like the coolest thing ever. It was just a really crazy journey to get there. Yeah. And, you know, S, she's been with us now for 4 years. And every 6 months you have to go to court. Yeah. And then you have to sit there with all these adults telling you, like, this child's not going to stay with you. We're going to get her back with her family. And, you know, thank you for helping us, but just know that this isn't long term. Every 6 months we did this. And then there was a short period where she did go back with her family, and unfortunately was not very good. And so they called us and said, hey, you still want to adopt her? And, you know, we're just weeks out now. We're weeks out of adopting her, which is just
finally
crazy.
That final last step.
Yeah. And I mean, there was a lot of like back, we would take like three steps forward and then we'd have to take a step or two back. And there was a lot of these kind of like roundabout issues. Mm-hmm. And we were really starting to feel like maybe we wouldn't get here. But, you know, you just persevere. When you look at that little face and you see how much this little baby has turned into.
Yeah.
And like, she's kind of, honestly, like, whenever we talk about fostering, everyone's like, oh my God, you guys are amazing. You're changing her life. And, you know, you're a godsend. And it's honestly the opposite. Like, she came into our lives at probably one of the worst times. And she just, I mean, she rescued us. She really did. Yeah. And I don't want to get choked up. You know, it's, foster care is not an easy thing. Not by any means. But it's amazing. You know, there's peaks and valleys. And sometimes those peaks are just so amazing because you just came out of that crappy valley. Mm-hmm. And our little ones, all of them. I mean, when S came back with us, she went ahead and brought her brother with her.
Yeah.
So all of them, they all have like amazing lives and they all have these crazy journeys and they're so resilient. You know, you look at them and you think like, what has this little one been through? And here they are every day just showing up and just being like every other goofy kid, you know, doing all the same stuff. And I think, like I said, I think when people talk about foster care, when they talk about even like reproduction, like whenever someone tells me, when they know that, you know, we had this miscarriage and we've had like so many cycles, and we, like I said, we went through, I think, 13 cycles. When I talk to people about that, and they all, you know, everybody's kind of, when you've been there and you've been through it, there's just like this understanding and this like immediate kind of, I get it, you know, I understand, I totally have been there. There's a respect that happens. And as I try to tell everybody, you know, don't give up. And if for some reason IVF and ART is not the success for you, consider fostering. Adoption is great. Any adoption, you know, you can do private adoptions, that's fine. But there's something about fostering, like knowing that child's path was one way and it's just totally taking a hard right and going in some awesome direction.
Yeah.
And knowing that you get to kind of be a part of that and watch them develop, it's pretty amazing.
That's incredible. I mean, the fact that S was a crying infant and it took, you know, just somebody to be like, hey, something's wrong
here. Yeah, yeah.
It's amazing.
She's still not a great sleeper. She is. She's just everywhere.
She's got a lot to do. She's very busy.
Yes. But she's just a pretty much a miracle. Like, we always say that Phoenix is our miracle baby, you know? She's our rainbow baby because
yeah.
Brittany was not supposed to be able to get pregnant. And after 13 cycles of IVF, we were done. We were quitting. We were just done with it. And lo and behold, you know, there were other plans for us that we didn't know about.
Right.
But you look at Phoenix and you say in one way, she's a miracle. But then I look at Sasha, I'm like, that's a totally different miracle.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy that one day this kid showed up and they weren't sure if she was going to develop at all. And now she's just this like buoyant, totally wild 4-year-old that it's just like every other kid. It's pretty awesome.
It's amazing. Such an incredible story. I don't have experience with IVF. What is that process like? I mean, you say a cycle. It's very arduous.
It's horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the first couple weeks of the cycle are just more about medications, like mostly hormones.
Okay.
And it's preparing your body to get pregnant. And then as you get closer to a point where they feel like, and it's appointment after appointment after appointment. Like one cycle, the first week or so, you'll be in the doctor's office 2 to 4 times a week.
Yeah.
And it's morning. They call it morning monitoring.
Okay.
It's supposed to sound pleasant, but it's not. And we had this, we went through 4 different clinics. And when we lived in Manhattan, there was a clinic, I won't say their name because I don't want any issues to come of it, but there was a very well-known clinic on the Upper West Side that we went to, and you would show up and they would give you, for morning monitoring, they would give you a buzzer. Like when you go to the Olive Garden, you know, and they're like, your table's ready.
Yeah.
Yeah, they would give you these buzzers and you would walk into a waiting room with like 30 or 40 different people with the same like exhausted look on their face because they're going through the same journey. It's like 6 o'clock in the morning. They've probably gone through weeks, a week or so of like hormone needles and pills and all this other stuff. So we're all through, you know, and you're all holding this ridiculous buzzer in your hand like you're about to get all you can eat salad and breadsticks, but it's not. It's not at all. So you get the buzz and it says, like, go to billing, because, you know, that's always the first thing right. they want to handle. Like, go right, pay us first. So you have to go to billing and you handle whatever you have to handle. And then you go back and you sit in the depressing waiting room again. And then they call you for the next room. And then you'll go to a room and they take your blood. And then they send you to another waiting room, which is supposed to be less depressing. And there's, like, less people there. And you're just kind of all waiting for the next step. And then you go into a room and they'll do an ultrasound. And they're just constantly checking your ovaries to see what's developing, if there's, what's it called? There's, like, these little pockets they wait to open up that look like they're ready to release an egg.
Okay.
And follicles. There we go. So they're checking all your follicles, see how many follicles you have, how many eggs you might produce, what looks viable. And they just watch and grow. That's why you're in there so much. You're in there 2-3 times a week just so they can keep checking, because you don't want to miss it.
Right.
And then as soon as everything looks like it's really looking good, you get another shot. Which is a stimulator. Basically, it causes you to ovulate. Okay. And then you come the next day for them to either retrieve. If you're doing IVF, they do an egg retrieval. Mm-hmm. And they'll go in and they'll kind of harvest whatever they can, which Brittany actually did our retrievals because she was younger, so the eggs would be more viable. Mm-hmm. And it's uncomfortable.
Sure.
You go in and they just basically go in and they take all the eggs out. And so it's like 24 hours of discomfort.
Yeah.
But you're what's it called? They knock you out.
Okay.
So she woke up every time. It's literally like an 8-minute thing. It happens so fast. But every time she would wake up and just be through, you know. And then after that, for IVF, they will fertilize the egg and monitor the egg and wait until that's an embryo or ready to be, placed back. But a lot of times we were doing inseminations. So when they would stimulate, you would have to come back and they would check and make sure everything looks the way it is. And they would do an insemination and then you come back 7 to 10 days after that. And those are, like, the longest 7 to 10 days ever. Because you're, like,
13 times.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Not only is it completely grueling, it's totally expensive. And we have awesome insurance. Yeah. So we were lucky because I know we paid less than what a lot of people pay.
Yeah.
But after 6 years and about 13 cycles, we were about $41,000 deep.
Wow.
So, you know, it's stressful. And a lot of marriages don't actually survive it.
Right.
A friend of ours, her and her husband, after I think a year and a half, they couldn't take it anymore. And because it's so stressful, you know, you're exhausted. You have to, and these things are so time sensitive. Like if you miss the window, you just spent 2-3 weeks and tons of money, and it's for nothing.
And you're on hormones.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. I hated me. I used to say to Brittany all the time, like, I'm so sorry. I know that one was rough. I know that cycle was rough. I'm so sorry. But yeah, it's terrible. But, you know, you just keep looking at the end game, you know, and get your eye on the prize. And so you try to push through.
When you went through the miscarriage, I mean, it's from what I've seen from my friends who have miscarried, it's not something people talk about.
No, everyone's really uncomfortable with it. And
what's your take on that?
I don't know. I think it's a mixture of things. Like there's some guilt. Like you immediately ask yourself, like, did I cause this? Like, did I not do something I was supposed to do? Did I not take care of myself? Did I have too much coffee? Like you start to ask yourself the most ridiculous things that like any rational adult would be like, dude, it wasn't you. It just didn't happen. So I think some of it's guilt. I think some of it's just, pain.
Yeah.
It's not easy for a lot of people to talk about. I think also there's some, almost like a feeling of failure,
mm-hmm.
you know, like I want to say everyone in our society, everyone has to have kids because I know a lot of people who don't and they're extremely happy and they look a lot better rested than I am. But there is this kind of like pressure almost in our society. Like, are you going to have kids? Where are your kids? Your family has to have kids.
Right, right.
And so if you're working so hard to get there, and I mean, my whole family and her whole family for 6 years, every time we saw people at parties and different events. Who's pregnant? Are you guys pregnant? Is anyone trying? What's the next step? And who's the donor? And like all of these questions. You know, most people would never ask the personal things. Right. Like, did you ask my cousin if she had sex with her husband right. last night? You know, like people ask things that are totally inappropriate because they know you're going through this. And I don't know if it's like their form of excitement or like they're just nosy and don't understand, you know, that's not appropriate. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you go through all of this and then you unfortunately end in a horrible trauma yeah. and it's not easy to talk about. It just isn't. And I wish more people would, because I feel like, and the more I talk about it, the more I'm finding out how many people go through it and unfortunately how common it is. And there's strength in numbers, you know, like right. we all feel a little better knowing that like, okay, so it wasn't me. Like even when we had the miscarriage, our OB is awesome. Great guy. We drive all the way to Huntington for him because he's worth it. You know, he knew we were just devastated. And he actually is the one who found Brittany's breast cancer. So he's kind of been through it all with us. Yeah. And, you know, he told us that day in the appointment, if you'd like to, we can do genetic testing to find out, you know, if there's a reason, you know. And we were so torn on a lot of that because even when they say the baby failed to thrive, it was still a fetus that just the heartbeat had stopped. And so it was now, what do we do? Do we wait and let this kind of happen naturally? Or do we use medical science to do this in a clean and healthier way? Right. And being raised Irish Catholic, I really was having a hard time sure. with that. And I spoke with like my mom and I spoke with, obviously with Brittany, and we talked with everybody we felt like we could get some good input from. And we just decided for us that the decision was to go to the hospital and kind of take care of it and let my body kind of start to heal sooner rather than later. And when the doctor talked us through the pain of having to kind of go through it naturally, it didn't seem like something we wanted to put ourselves through since we were already kind of suffering the loss. Mm-hmm. So, we did. We went to the hospital and he said, you know, if you'd like, we can test everything and find out. And they did. And a week later, we got news that like was a huge relief. You know, the baby had what's called trisomy 13, which means there was an extra chromosome and it basically always causes the death, you know. Right. And he said, as if we didn't do this, it could have been, you know, weeks later, sometimes even months later, you keep carrying. Wow. And then you give birth to a child that just never takes a breath.
Right.
And I just felt a lot of relief knowing that that wasn't me.
Right.
You know, I didn't do anything. There was nothing I could do to change it. This was the genetic material of the baby. So, you know, I try to tell people, like, if you go through this, as hard as it is, try to get as many answers as you can because you do want that closure. You do want to be able to say, okay, that was just...
I had a really good friend of mine. She went through a couple of miscarriages and she had had a beautiful baby boy and then she lost a couple babies after that and they did finally decide to do testing and it turned out her body was like attacking...
Oh boy.
...the embryos or the fetus once it... So all it took was her to have... I think she had to take shots and now she has her beautiful daughter.
That's crazy. And it's crazy.
Yeah.
It's so hard when you're going through that. Like you keep, like she probably beat herself up all the time over
all
it.
Time.
And to find out, like, look, it doesn't, you could eat spinach for 9 months. It's not going to change the outcome, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So, it, you know, science and medicine is, you know, a godsend in a lot
yeah.
of ways.
Yeah. Is there any advice you'd like to give anyone about both IVF or fostering that we haven't already talked about?
Well, your spouse is like the most important thing and you gotta be a team. And, if you find yourselves splintering and one's in one way and one's going the other way, we personally found that was a good time to stop.
Mm-hmm.
We did. We would stop whatever we were talking about. And sometimes it was like weeks later, sometimes it was months later, we would revisit, but we would spend that time just kind of living life. Cause when you're going through this, you get totally absorbed by it.
Yeah.
and it can just eat away at everything happy and healthy in your life. And so I think our marriage survived because we knew when to call it, and it wasn't permanent. I mean, even at the end when we thought it was permanent, it wasn't. So we just knew breaks were important, even financially, because after a couple of cycles, you're like, okay, let's try to build our savings account back up. And you just start to kind of like step away and live life. And we traveled, you know, we went to Costa Rica, Puerto Rico, we were everywhere, Dominican. We just would have fun and be just normal people who weren't going through what we were going through. And
so you're saying breaks are so important.
Yes, it's
so
critical. You kind of recharge mm-hmm. and you reconnect right. because going through all of that, there's silly things, like especially with the hormones, you will bicker. You know, you just kind of get into silly things and you stop. You start to forget what it's all about and what exactly. And you're so focused on the goal that all of a sudden, like, you move away from what it's really for and what it's really about. And so the breaks are really critical, and don't feel defeated when you take those breaks, and don't feel like that's, you know, that's going to be the end game and that's the outcome. Like I said, like 6 years we did it, and we started to just say, hey, we're not going to have any kids and we're just going to adopt and whatever. And then, you know, even that was totally not really what was going to happen. And so just kind of live life and take the breaks as needed, and stay strong with each other and try to build each other up so that when you hit a point where either you're done or you have a trauma, you're ready to handle it.
Right. It's amazing to me that you guys just keep going. Like, you just keep plowing through all these different things that keep coming up, these huge roadblocks, whether it be your IVF or the adoption of S and all the steps you've had to take with that. I mean, what is it? Is it your connection together? Is it your desire to have this life that you see? What really keeps you going?
Each other, for sure. But also just, I think that we both are kind of naturally the not take no for an answer kind of people. And, you know, Brittany is brilliant. She's an amazing teacher. And I met her in her first year as a teacher, and she literally came out the gate. Like, most first year teachers are totally drowning and they're just trying to get their way and figure out classroom management. And she didn't, like, that's just who she is. And so she kind of has this like awesome persona of like, you're not going to tell me, I'll do what I think is going to be done. And I'm going to get there no matter what it takes. And I kind of have a similar personality. You know, graduated high school at 4'11 and went to school on a basketball scholarship. So, you know, like, you just kind of, we're both that person, but also we both kind of look at each other and say, no, we're not going to accept that. You know, we're not going to take no here, or we're not going to let this define us. Like, when Brittany got sick, you know, everybody was like, calm down, walk away from the foster care and just focus on her health. And Brittany was like, that is going to be so depressing.
Yeah.
Focusing on chemo for months. I don't want that. I need something positive in my life. And so, you know, I think because of that, we both just try to find what's next, you know, like, okay, this horrible thing happened. And I'm not going to let that ruin all this other good stuff out there. And we're going to move forward. And like, even now, everyone's like, oh, you guys have three kids. It's crazy. Three toddlers. It's nuts, which it really is. But, you know, we plan to foster more. Like, they call me all the time still with placements. We're looking more at middle school and high school age, and we want to focus on the LGBTQ community because they really struggle to find positive, supportive placements for them. But, like, just always looking and saying, we have this. This is what we want, and we're happy, and we just enjoy this. And if there's something more, we're going to get it. Nothing's going to get in the way.
Right. Oh, I love that. Well, thank you so much. It's been an amazing conversation. You guys are incredible.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
And just so happy for you guys with the adoption of S. That's amazing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's 4 years in the making, and it's just going to be completely amazing to look her in the face and tell her, you know, she's a Valar.
Yeah. Well, your journey's not over. I know you're going to keep doing amazing things and helping more kids and just being awesome.
You got it.
But thank you so much. But I'm going to put resources for IVF and for also fostering kids, and maybe some other links that people might find helpful.
Yeah.
on the Glowcast website. So that's glowcast.life. And I'll also put it in the Instagram links.
That's
so
great.
You guys can find it there.
That's awesome.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I just wanted to thank Erin for telling her beautiful story. I'm sure so many people are going to find inspiration in that. There's so many people that struggle with infertility, and a lot of people that are going through the foster care process or adoption process. And none of these journeys are easy. When you are trying to have children, whether it's traditionally or untraditionally, whatever method you're going through, it's always nice to know that there are people that have been where you are. So take a listen. If there's anyone that you think needs to hear this story, please share it. And congratulations, Erin, on adopting your beautiful little S.